And welcome everybody to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. It's Emmanuel. I seem to have made it into YouTube land safely. Kyle?
So did I. Yep.
All right. And on Skype land, Rob?
Yes, indeed.
And Gila?
I'm here too.
And Alex?
Yeah, I'm here. Rough transition, but I made it.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. And, of course, we now have open phone lines. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. If you have anything to say, to comment on, to contribute, please, by all means, give us a call, and we can have a little chat. But the article I was alluding to at the end of the show was a guest essay in the Times today, The Right's Triumph Over Social Media by Julia Angwin. Basically opens up the red tide that swept across the nation in our recent election, marked many things. One of them was a right-wing triumph over social media. Under heavy pressure from the right, and with the help of Elon Musk, the leading tech platforms opened the floodgates for propaganda to spread unchecked. The result was a flood of lies and distortions flowing through our social media feeds, and that led to possibly the most misinformed electorate we've ever seen. Examples. Many voters headed to the polls convinced that border crossings are higher than ever before. They are not. Violent crime rates are rising. Untrue. And inflation is soaring. Ditto. We will never know how much this garbage may have swayed voters, but we do know it influenced one side significantly, conservatives. The fact that all of these social media outlets have either turned right-wing or have decided not to touch certain things that are too controversial, you know, if you ask artificial intelligence run by Google if Donald Trump was convicted of any crimes, it will refuse to answer. It doesn't want to get involved. So you have that, and then you have the ultra-right wing pushing its propaganda unanswered by something equivalent on the left. And people's perception of Silicon Valley, of high-tech, is that it's leftist. Well, what happened to that? It doesn't seem very leftist right now. It seems like it's pushing the right-wing agenda far more than it ever has before, and to great effect as well. So that kind of thing scares me. And it's, you know, it's part of why I'd like to see people gathering in one, two, even three new places. But what I don't want to see is each of these new places tearing down other new places, because that's a parallel to what's been happening on the political scene as well. We need to basically support any place where people have a chance to express themselves, to meet up with other people, and to grow a community. And if something turns out not to be as good as we thought it was, we'll know that, and we'll have other places to go when that day comes, which hopefully it won't. So for now, I suggest everybody get onto Blue Sky, get onto Mastodon, get onto whatever the hell it was that Alex mentioned at the end of the show. What was that again? Alex, you're muted. You're completely muted, Alex. Your mouth is moving, but nothing's coming out. Really shouldn't be so hard. He's continuing to talk.
Yeah, now is
yeah,
it better?
Yeah, now it works. Imagine that. Know. Okay.
So what's going on there? Yeah, idiotic. That was Farcaster. So I think if you go to farcaster.xyz, you'll be safe. You actually have to install something called Warpcast.
What do you mean you have to install something? This is what we warned
people
about.
You need a client. Yeah, so you need a particular client in order to access Farcaster called Warpcast. And you can download that for your iOS or Android device right from your Google Play or Apple Store, whatever the hell they call it, the App Store, I guess. And, but yeah, it's interesting. I don't use it all that much. I'm not a big social media person in general.
Well, what is the advantage of this?
Well, it's decentralized. It's kind of based off of Web3 technology. Mm-hmm. It's it doesn't have the kind of the noise and the clutter and the alt-right poisoning everything, the pornography, the violence, et cetera, that you're seeing all the time now on Twitter. You're not forced to read Elon Musk posts. It's a more genuine community. I think it's very tech-focused as well. But look, it's an alternative media platform that's fully decentralized and open source as well. So I think it very much fits in with the hacker and philosophical mindset that we all have, and would be probably a better place to congregate than Twitter or Facebook.
Decentralization seems to be the theme. Blue Sky claims to be decentralized. Mastodon claims to be decentralized. It seems like that's what people want, is some control over what it is they see, and control over their own feeds. Go ahead, Gila.
So two questions. number one, does the block function work on this thing, Alex? Because that's one thing that's gone away from Twitter recently, is a functional block function. But also, does Blue Sky claim to be decentralized? I thought it was very, you know, it's all kind of one pot at this point. I know that Mastodon has, you know, you have your instances, and you have to go, you find your instance, you find your home, and you can federate with other instances, and you can also defederate other instances, and if it turns out to be like a Nazi bar at that particular instance, you can just, your instance can decide you were not talking to the Nazi bar.
Well, let me answer that an excerpt from a TechCrunch article that came out 2 days ago. Is Blue Sky decentralized? Yes. Blue Sky's team is developing the decentralized AT protocol, which Blue Sky was built atop. In its beta phase, users can only join the BSKY.social network, but Blue Sky plans to be federated, meaning that endless individually operated communities can exist within the open source network. So if a developer outside of Blue Sky built their own new social app using the AT protocol, Blue Sky users could jump over to the new app and port over their existing followers, handle, and data. According to a Blue Sky post, you'll always have the freedom to choose and to exit instead of being held to the whims of private companies or black box algorithms. And wherever you go, your friends and relationships will be there, too. So that's
always dependent.
It sounds promising.
It does sound promising, but it's not there yet.
Okay, but do we want to help it get there? You know, I mean, I think that's important.
I also could win the lottery next week.
Not if you don't play the game.
Well, can I just mention one thing? The idea of a thriving ecosystem of a lot of different platforms, I think, is actually quite sound. I mean, that's so useful. They don't all have to. It doesn't all have to boil down to the one killer app or the one successful one or two. Anyway, that's all I wanted to point out. I'm for that.
Right. I mean, I'm willing to trust intentions at this point and see where they go, rather than say you're not good enough, so we're not going to include you. If we have three strong social media platforms to work with, it's a damn good start. So let's build those and see.
But it wouldn't be terrible if it was 15 that were all in the same.
Well, the only thing that I worry about is that, you know, having so many would fracture the community so much that we'd never be able to communicate with each other. I mean, already there are people who don't use email, and you have to figure out how to contact them. It's ridiculous.
Okay, I don't want to go off on that anyway.
Yeah.
There's lots of apps anyway. So,
all right. We have a phone call?
Yes.
Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, this is the Gibson. Hi, everybody.
Hey, how you doing?
We're talking about federated social media. I have opinions. Surprise.
All right, yes. You run on Mastodon instance, I believe.
I do, but also as part of the Veilid project, one of my core contributions was monitoring other emergent platforms at the time to understand what their MO was and what they were trying to accomplish. And Blue Sky was one of those platforms.
Now, what did you find?
What I found was they changed their direction quite a bit in the early stages with what was popular in the moment. For example, they were largely going to be NFT and cryptocurrency related when that was super hot a few years ago, right? Over time, that changed. They kind of backed off. They got into this federated model that they started building. There's been a lot of contention in that developer community about whether or not to carry on with the federated model, although it sounds like it's back in style for them, which is good. I applaud them for that. The one thing that they do that they don't really talk about enough, in my opinion, is that even if you're federated, they have something called the Big Social Graph that is a centralized social graph of all the federated nodes that talk to Blue Sky and all of the users on those. So there is still a data collection model that you will not have control over if you're using the AT protocol.
Okay. and
establishing that, because that is kind of the violation of privacy that you would think you would get out of a federated, or the opposite of the privacy that you might think you might would get out of a federated model, right?
Okay.
So I'm not here to like say they're all bad, right? But what I am here to say is that some of the things they're doing, to me, point toward further monetization of the platform and turning it into something that may be user hostile over time.
We're getting different voices somehow. I'm not sure where they're coming from. Is that you, Alex?
He's stabilizing.
Alex, you're all grainy.
You're still
what's going
muted,
on
though. Can you unmute when you're
ready? In New York City. How do you have such a poor connection? Now he's
frozen. I don't know.
He's completely frozen now.
Yeah. Okay. Am I back?
Well, you're sort of back, but what was it you were trying to say?
I thought there was a pause, so I jumped in. It just turned out that my internet connection had somehow
crapped out. Let's stop talking about your internet connection and get to the words you want to say.
Yeah. I was agreeing with Gibson in that you would think that the ability to control where your data is going would be part of this decentralized or federated model that Blue Sky was developing. But if that's mysteriously absent, then you're not getting the benefit of the bargain there. Now, it's a buzzword without any kind of distinction between it and Twitter, then.
And I want to point out that I am hopeful, much like was mentioned a little while ago, I am very hopeful that we have an ecosystem of these sorts of environments, right? I'm not someone that thinks there is one right way to do it. Lord knows I have enough ammo in my debate belt about Mastodon's mistakes they've made over the years, right? And I'm still running that software. Like, there's mistakes made no matter who creates the platform. And, you know, I think the thing is, we have to avoid it becoming another data silo that can fall to Cory Doctorow's, encrapification. Wait, we're not on the air.
Yeah, you can say it.
Anyway, it won't fall to encryptification, right? So you're in a situation where you want to avoid that data siloing occurring, because that's where the value comes from, and that's when the decisions to make changes to the platform that do not advantage the user comes in. Time and time again, right? We've seen it with Facebook. We've seen it with everything. If you have a true federated model where that data isn't necessarily being monetized in that fashion, you have a more free model, in my opinion, and one where communities and users are able to make choices that enable them to protect the communities they love, to protect themselves, and to still have a social media experience that works for them. Now, that said, Blue Sky may turn this around. They could surprise me, and I would love to see that, right? But I'm just saying that there's a lot of indicators here up front, and I do threat modeling for a living, basically. A lot of indicators up front that make me not feel comfortable with the direction and the decisions they make.
Do you think there is time to have a dialogue and to get them to get on the right course, or do you think it's too late?
Early on in that development period, there were some decisions made about who was really able to communicate and contribute to that effort that give me a little bit of pause. For example, the Fediverse, Mastodon in particular, I could say ActivityPub, since we're really talking down to the protocol level, they had representatives in the Blue Sky project as well. Originally, they were looking at the ActivityPub protocol. That's actually kind of a mouthful. They were looking at the ActivityPub protocol to back Blue Sky, which would have given interoperability and some very interesting opportunities there. But they decided against it because it was going to be difficult to be able to control that data flow back to their data silo they wanted to do with the big social graph, right? And so it was marked off the list. Now, to me, interoperability between these systems is key because, A, it reduces the number of protocols in play. You could use ActivityPub to do all of these, much like, much to my chagrin, Meta or Facebook is doing. with Threads, right? It's an activity pub protocol underneath that, and it's kind of federated, but not exactly. So kind of doing the same thing, but through that federated model, right? So there's just some indicators there that make me concerned. I do hope, I would love to see them thrive, right? Because it wouldn't change me running hackers.town, frankly, for example, or the Fediverse, but it would give us a valid multi-platform system where we could engage at different places. Right now, I'm not comfortable with the decisions they've made so far. That said, given a little time, I don't think they've gone too far yet. I do often point to the fact that one of the decisions made for the launch of the beta, which is when I joined Blue Sky, the content moderation is interesting. And it's expanded over time and gotten a little bit better, but one of the very first things they had was basically a slider button you could click that allowed hate speech to be in your feed. They didn't moderate based on hate speech. They allowed you to turn it on if you wanted. And that's because of that opt-in, opt-out nature of that, that seems like kind of not a great way to go about it, right?
Is that still there?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. I just opened up my account the first time of year before I joined this call. There is a section under your settings of the Blue Sky Moderation Service where you can set all the things you see in there. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see extremist, radical views advocating violence, hate, or discrimination against individuals or groups. And you can choose to set it to off, warn, or hide. It has evolved. Before, it was just a slider button.
Interesting. Okay. I'd like to see just what that involves.
So they are using using an AI algorithm to classify posts, right? And then these categories are how you can control that, which I think is okay. However, there are certain categories I think that maybe we should consider taking moderator action on. And extremist views, particularly hate speech, is one that I don't think you should allow on your platform. I think it's bad for everybody involved. So that's my opinion. I recognize we all have different opinions on this. I'm not trying to say that's it. But the decision to make it a toggle button instead of actually take moderator action, to me, kind of has a bit of a dereliction of duty feel to it on a social media platform.
Well, I think we definitely need to bring that up, and that needs to be part of the dialogue, and see if they're learning from what their users are saying. If I had to say one thing that was positive, it relates to the ease with which you can get a Blue Sky account going. And that's important for those people who aren't technical. Mastodon has always been more complicated than I think it should be. I want it to be easier. I want it to not be something where you need to have the slightest bit of technical knowledge. It should be simple. You should know this is what this does, not send private messages to everybody because the setting is set opposite than what you might think it would be. Little things like that. It can get better. And then you also have the fiefdoms that develop from people who run their own Mastodon servers, who basically don't allow certain things that you might think are unfair. Yes, you can move to another one. It's a pain in the ass to do it, but you can. Things like that. There are pros and cons for all of them. And I think we're at a very early stage right now, but I want to see them grow. I want to see them develop. And if it gets to the point where it's obvious that this particular platform is doing too many evil things, well, you know, then we're in a good position to say that's it. You know, we have another platform to go to. But
yeah,
I think it's too early to know which one is going to be the most successful or will best serve our purposes. There's still time to help in the shaping of that, and I think we should take that opportunity.
Right. So I agree with you fully on that. I want to be clear. Mastodon, the Fediverse as a whole, has an adoption issue with a bit of a technical barrier up front. People have talked about it and reported that a million times, right? I know some people on Mastodon tend to say things along the lines of, well, I mean, it's not hard to use. I use it. That's great, except just consider for a moment, take your hacker hat off, right, and consider for a moment how difficult it is for someone that has no idea what they're walking into to even do something that is seemingly simple to us as choosing which instance, which server they want to sign up to, right? It's kind of problematic right out of the gate for people that aren't really technical, right? There's tons of things about Mastodon like that. The interface itself, a lot of people deride.
Mm-hmm.
There is tons of improvement that can happen on that side of the house. And not to call the creator of Mastodon into question, but, you know, there's been a lot of proposed improvements over the years that fell on deaf ears when we try to get that done. And don't make it into the platform. So, you know, there's a bit of a beneficial dictator for life situation going on with Mastodon, I think, which is kind of problematic as well, right?
It's also kind of typical.
It is. It's not great. There's room for improvement on both sides of this. I think my biggest concern with Mastodon, ultimately, is the fact that now they are starting to actively engage with groups like Meta and seeking their approval with the way they develop things, it seems like. So we're in a situation, because Threads are showing up on the Fediverse, that I feel like there's a little bit of embrace, extend, extinguish going on now, right? And it's getting called out occasionally about it. But it's one of those where there's this successful protocol and platform that's working pretty well. It does have its barriers, and it needs to get better. Accessibility could be way better. But even they are starting to be impacted. The development team for it is starting to be impacted by the traditional social media silos, the data collectors, right? So,
well, that's not good.
there's issues
wow.
there too, right? Yeah. Well, Threads showing up on the Fediverse really kind of soured the vibe a little bit, you know?
Okay, let's look to China. Are they doing it right? Social media sites over. I'm desperate at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sticking with the Fediverse right now, mainly because it allows me to control the experience for my community, and allows my users to control their own experience a little bit better than everything else out there. But at the same time, it doesn't escape a lot of the same pitfalls.
Well, tell us something about what it's like to run your own Mastodon server. What's involved?
Most days it's pretty easy, right? If as you know, we keep a closed community, so you have to have an invite. Someone that's there already has to invite you, sort of thing, right? As long as, you know, 99% of the days, there's not really a whole lot that has to be done. What we will see is we'll find reports of, another instance somewhere that's hosting or saying things that fall under the hate speech category, things like that. And we'll have to go defederate from that or something along those lines. And it's just a few clicks of the button normally then. Upgrades are a huge pain in the butt for that server. We are 8 years into this, people. This should be an easier process than having to go back to the original documentation and work through an upgrade just to upgrade your server. And it's hit and miss many times on your results. Like, you'll run through the upgrade, and you might end up with a server that doesn't come back up pretty easily. And, so backups are critical when you do them, things like that. So the actual maintenance of the back end is kind of painful sometimes. Most of the time, 80% of the time, no problems. That last 20% can have you down for days in some cases, and it's very bad. So that's to me, from an admin perspective, the weakest part of it. Occasionally you'll have somebody that's having a bad day and they've been a valuable community member or something, but they come in and they just put somebody on full blast and in a way that you can't ignore it, and you have to take admin action against one of your own. That's not fun, right? That's a bad day. Probably the thing I hate about it the most, because I consider most people in our community friends. So to me, having to deal with that on a day is really painful. Other than that, the actual experience of running it and just day-to-day operation is not bad. But, you do have a bad day every once in a while, but I think you have that, those situations, regardless of the platform. You know, problematic users, things like that, are always going to show up, and then you have to deal with it somehow. And that, you know, that goes all the way back to BBS era, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, this reminds me of running BBSs. It's very similar sounding.
It is very similar, actually. Like, you're looking at that sort of hyper-distributed model, right? And in some ways, you could even say it's sort of store and forward on the way it communicates messages. It's not really store and forward, 'cause it's more real-time than it was back then. But it's not dissimilar. Like, when you think of messages traversing the Mastodon network, or actually ActivityPub, I should say, all of the Fediverse, not just Mastodon, when you think about how those messages flow, if you look at the usernames, you'll notice they look a lot like email, right? So-and-so at server name.
Mm-hmm.
It actually works a lot like SMTP, the email protocol, like the way it exchanges messages, the way the data flows. Like, until you get down to, like, ports and stuff, it's actually really similar. Like, it's a very good close analog to what we understand is how email works. So, you know, to me, that's a kind of a good analog way to explain it, right? But it creates the fiefdom problem. I had several slides at the Valid talk we did at Hope this year that kind of went over how we got here, and it pointed out these weaknesses in the structure, but it shared it with BBSs almost directly. Like, capricious admins are a problem. You've got all the same problems you get from any distributed thing. Net splits happen, which are the community, when, you know, you talked about earlier, when sometimes you can't get to one server from the server you're on. Well, that's really kind of the same as a net split if it happens at that size, and it has happened more than once in volume. So, you know, it's kind of the more things change, the more they stay the same at the end of it. You're using the web front end to serve everything. You're using TCP/IP now, but it's really very similar to the experience of running a BBS.
Gila, go ahead.
So, first of all, hello to everybody in the chat. We have 55 people watching us right now, which is awesome, and a lot of really active conversation happening in the chat, which is always wonderful. I would like to share a comment from one of our listeners, which I think illustrates the fact that I'm not the techiest person on the planet, but I am succeeding at Mastodon. So here we go. Jason says, I was thinking to host Snack instead of Pleroma as a Fediverse server, but I don't know how good Snack is, but I have more federation issues with my own Pleroma instance compared to Fastodon, and I actually poked Rob in the arm and said, is that English?
Right? I mean, that alone is kind of the problem, right? I mean, right there, it becomes so complex because the network becomes so varied and so distributed and weird that all these decisions, how do you even talk about them to somebody that's not immersed in the culture?
Well, do you have to talk about it to someone? I mean, maybe, you know, this world can exist transparent to those who just want to use it to communicate. I think that's the problem, that we haven't reached that stage.
We have not. I agree. That's where we need to be headed. But I think it's going to take something based on ActivityPub that is not Mastodon to get us there. I've been saying for a long time, quoting the old Nine Inch Nails song, you know, this wasn't built to last. This is for right now. And so we are very much in a state of being where we've got this platform that does the job okay, but it's not mature, and it's got so many things that could be better about it, right? Like, to your point, the user experience could be a million times better than it is. The you know, what I was talking about earlier with trying to get this to where it's more manageable and easier for people to run on their own. I would love to see a Fediverse where everybody kind of had their own server. As a matter of fact, that's kind of what we were trying to do with Valid, with the fully distributed model, right? Was get people, we still are trying, I don't want to say tried in the past sense, but this is still working, but trying to get people control over their own experience solely. It would be better for everybody if you can do that in a transparent manner that doesn't require what we see with Mastodon now.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, comments? Alex, go ahead. Alex, you're muted again, I think.
Yeah, all right, there we go.
Now we're back. So I think that Gibson is right. He's on to some really interesting things. I think you should keep plowing along with Valid, and I think it's such a great, interesting project. And you know, he's been spending a lot of cycles on that for a long time, and I think there's a there. So I applaud his efforts, and I think it's always great to hear your insights, especially with respect to the ins and outs of social media, because as you mentioned, it's like you are very much like an old hand in a sysop when it comes to Mastodon. It's always fascinating.
I just feel I have the radical belief that the data construct you build for yourself online is no more alien to you than your right hand. And that's all I want, is people to have the freedom to own that data construct in the way that they can to ensure the best outcomes for them. And that's what we got to work toward. And that means ease of use. Just as you said a minute ago, Emmanuel, it's ease of use is key, and we're failing at that. We really are.
Yes, go ahead, Rob.
We do have a comment that came in over Mastodon about this, and it's an interesting question for our caller. Someone called Draken Black Knight asks, any chance of a hard fork of the Signal protocol implemented into Valid? That would make Valid very secure. What do you think about that, Gibbs?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time Signal's been forked, right? Well, that's called WhatsApp, last I checked. You know, we're friendly with the Signal Foundation, with the actual org that maintains Signal. I don't think of them as problematic in any way, frankly. I think we're very much aligned spiritually on this mission. You know, I don't know that there's any plans or even reality that would happen in the future, just because we're kind of doing this in different ways. Although I think there would be, like, the one thing that concerns me about Signal, And I don't think they've done anything wrong here, right? I want to be clear on this. But it comes back to the enshittification discussion. The thing about Signal is that their infrastructure is very centralized. And that comes with cost. And that cost will drive them to make decisions to be able to continue to offer the service while mitigating the cost to them, because they have to. Because as it grows, it continues to get bigger, it costs more to do, and they're, you know, right now they take donations, as you see in your Signal app, right? But that never quite gets there to cover it. So to me, long term, they're going to have to look at ways to mitigate the cost of the platform to keep it alive and maintain the very punk rock spirit they have about how they're doing things, which I applaud. And so that force of enshittification we see everywhere else is going to come for them too at some point. Now, they've been very lucky and very good, frankly, so far, and Meredith does a great job over there maintaining this, but they've been very good at avoiding that problem so far. But I do think that the secret weapon Valid has that no one really talks about is that sort of people's cloud approach we took, where those resources are available spread out across the entire distributed cloud that we built, which takes away that bad incentive of having to monetize to be able to pay for your infrastructure, right? If there was a place that it would make sense for that, that's where it is. I don't know that it'll ever get there. You know, like I said, we certainly have a lot of respect for that org, and if they ever came asking, we would help them out the best we could, right, to try to make that happen. But I think that if it does get to that point, because what they're doing right now is really good, they don't really need us for the privacy side of things. If it gets to that point, that would be the driving reason, because of the cloud costs and trying to mitigate them.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, I applaud Signal's motivation and what they do. I do have some issues, though, and I think it's important to, you know, to express those. I run a lot of different systems for different purposes. Don't judge. I run Windows systems and Mac OS and all kinds of different things, Linux and FreeBSD, you name it. There are situations sometimes where you want to run something old. I've got Windows XP machines. I've got Windows 7. I've got Windows 8. You know, all different machines running different software that works in that environment and doesn't work well in a newer environment or on a different operating system altogether. And Signal was one of the apps that worked really well until they said, we're not going to support this particular OS anymore. We're not going to support anything below Windows 10. And I don't know. I just don't see why something like that is essential. When you're talking about a signaling protocol, you know, that basically you're sending messages, encrypted messages back and forth, you should be able to get that to work on virtually any operating system, and you shouldn't be pressured to constantly upgrade if you don't want to. You should be allowed to have the environment that works best for you. And I just think that puts off a lot of people when you say, as of today, we're no longer going to support this operating system, and you have to either no longer use the service or get a different operating system. And sometimes that means you have to get a different machine if your machine is old and doesn't support a newer operating system. So there's that. And the other thing is maybe they fixed this. But I know when I first joined Signal, I was barraged with all these people say, hey, welcome to Signal. They tell you, or they tell people when you've joined, and if they know who you are, they will reach out to you, and maybe you don't want that. Maybe you want to join Signal quietly and not advertise it to the world. They make this assumption on your behalf, and it's not a valid assumption. Other than that, no problems.
Right. So we faced a similar decision early on in the planning of the Valid project, right? And this is a decision that will plague any privacy-respecting project. You almost have to decide right out of the gate whether you're decoupling identity from authentication. In our case, we do. We don't care so much if you are who you say you are. We care that you can authenticate as the identity you're authenticating as, right? And the reason this matters is because we wanted to take phone numbers out of the mix. We wanted to take any personally identifying information out of the mix. And it's also why in the beta for Valid Chat, you'll see there's an invite system where you have to actually exchange your either a QR code or a generated hash with whoever you want to put as a contact into your Valid install, right? And the reason for that is strictly kind of old school, right? It's like, okay, you know this person, you know who they are, you've confirmed that, and that's why you're trading that information with them. Or you haven't, but that's your decision, right? Now, that said, Signal has gotten a little better, although I have a little bit of a concern about this too, because they have gone to allowing you to use a handle instead of a phone number while registering for Signal. Now, they'll have both, but you can use your identity as that handle instead, which mitigates that concern. But, you know, on the other side of that, somewhere there's a database that has people's handles and their actual personal phone number in the same database, right? So I have some concerns about that as well, because it could be an identifying mark that could be used against anybody. That said, Signal's been great about challenging that and stopping those sorts of things, abuses from happening. And so I can't complain too much. It's kind of a threat model that may never materialize. But, you know, ultimately, yeah, it comes down to how privacy extremist do you want to go, right? I agree with you. I found the Signal habit of telling everybody, you've ever talked to that you're on Signal now, that was not great. And this is the one complaint I always had about them. I don't know if they still do it or not. I've been using it so long now, I haven't gotten one of those in a long time, so I'm not sure.
Well, I think they do, because I occasionally see a notice that somebody I know is now on Signal. And, you know, I don't need to know that. You know, they'll tell me if they want to talk to me on Signal. But, I'm sure it's better for the product to be able to migrate people over to the Signal app from your Messages app or whatever. Get some permission to do that from the person who's signing in, because it could easily backfire, and they might be trying to do something more secure, and it's simply advertising to everybody, hey, this person now wants to be more secure. I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they don't want their abuse to a significant other to know, right? I mean, there's all sorts of reasons for this.
True. Well, you know, I think we're going to move on to another phone call, as this one has lasted for most of the hour so far, but it's been great.
That.
No, it's awesome.
You.
I'm so glad you called, and I hope you continue doing all the things you're doing and that we continue to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. We'll talk next time.
All right. Be well. 802-321-4225. Any thoughts from Skypeland?
Well, that was a lot of fun. Where are we in terms of commentary? Yes. In response to the question that Gila pulled out of the chat with all the jargon that was arguably English, Alexius Pendragon said, "I am pretty techie and I got most of those words, but I still don't know all of them, and I don't need to. I'm still running a server with happy users that federates."
Yeah, and that's good. That's good. But remember the problem I had with the Federation and running into some closed-minded people that didn't want me to mention the war in the Middle East, and as soon as I did, I got kicked off. You know, nonsense like that happens when you have little fiefdoms or, you know, BBS a type of scenery. You just have to be prepared for it. Yeah, it's part of the package. But I was kind of surprised by that. You know, it was something that I wasn't expecting, that I wasn't really prepared for. And it was, you know, it was a pain to have to migrate somewhere else, but you can do it, and that's a good thing. Each of these platforms has its advantages and disadvantages. That's why I really would like people to run them into the ground, to, like, test them out, break whatever you can, figure out how to do it better, because that's how we build a community, you know, not by being victims of the established outlets that are abusing all of us in one way or another. 802-321-4225. Kyle, any phone calls coming in? We don't seem to have the bell on, so I can't hear. We do. Okay. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I have a Verizon built in. Yeah, nice to meet you. My name's Nick.
I'm sorry. Say that again?
Nice to meet you. My name's Nick.
Oh, Nick. How you doing?
Good. I got a Verizon building near me, and they just got hydrogen generators installed outside of it. I wanted to hear if you ever heard of that.
I haven't. Anyone else?
Hydrogen generators, not familiar.
Yeah, so on the side of it says Bloom Energy. Like, that's the company that makes them. And there's, like, 8 or 9 of them in a row. It, like, turns natural gas into, I guess, hydrogen, and it's like a fuel cell. It's like a chemical reaction. It just makes energy.
That's interesting. It's
yeah, so it's cool. It's just like a local office of Verizon building, and it's just, yeah, I guess, like a whole dock of these installed near the building.
Yeah, it's distinct from, I guess, what would have more particulate and other kinds of exhaust in the form of diesel generators that were used for backups, but they could be used for other kinds
of...
Go ahead.
No, definitely I agree with you with transitioning over from diesel.
Yeah, they could be using it for other loads and projects that aren't necessarily backup.
Yeah, it's like a solid state load almost.
Right.
Can we ask what part of the country you're in?
I'm right here in New York in Long Island.
I see. Okay. Interesting. Well, I know precious little about this.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. It just happened because, you know, I walked by and I saw all the construction.
Uh-huh. Well, you can always walk up to them and just ask them what they're doing, you know, and sometimes they'll just tell you.
Yeah, no, that's true. There's like a retirement neighborhood next to it, and I walked on their path.
Uh-huh.
Got pretty close.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of the nameplate maybe and see exactly what it is, but it's a cool, I guess, concept.
Is it mobile or is it like a fixed installation? Like, does it look like it's temporary?
It's cemented and it's solid.
Oh, it's cool. like
the yellow poles around it, maybe like a foot distance, like really keeping it controlled.
Bowlers. Okay, yeah. So that's like a permanent upgrade or new generation method that they're deploying. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a large scale deployment, so that's cool, yeah. So anyway, I was going to call that in just to, I guess, tell you. I thought it was like a nice technology transition almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, take some pictures, too. Send us some pictures. We'd love to see it.
Yeah, I got a picture. I can send it to you. Sure. Mm-hmm. What is it?
OTH@2600.com.
You got it. Hold on.
I wonder if that reduces the need for batteries in any case.
That would be nice.
Right? Like, so they have this, what the caller described as like a solid state load. That it can accept basically constant demand, and then in a backup, maybe it can power itself through its own storage. something
like
that.
I don't know how big like a central office would be referred to as.
Yeah.
But it's a nice building size, I guess, but it's always been there. You know, it used to be Bell beforehand. It had like the logo burnt on the side of the building.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So I don't know how deep they go or whatever, but whatever they got running there, it's always been, and it's nice.
Interesting. Well, we'll keep an eye out for this. That definitely sounds like an interesting development.
Yeah, I guess the energy transition, that wise. Like, it takes natural gas, and the only byproduct is water.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as they're using less inside, I think, like, some of the equipment is getting smaller and using less the
energy-wise, yeah,
the
environment.
Stuff that maybe was not viable in the past becomes a little bit more feasible for longer periods of like an outage scenario and stuff. So that's fascinating to see that there are changes being made to how that's done.
Okay, well, thank you for the call.
No problem. We'll send you the picture.
All right, I look forward to seeing it.
Have a good night.
Right, you too.
Bye.
802-321-4225. If you've seen something interesting, let us know about it. Yes, Rob, go ahead.
While we're waiting for a call, I just want to give a little shout-out. There's been obituaries and things going around for somebody who passed away back on the 12th. That is Thomas E. Kurtz, who was a legend in the computer world. He led the development of a computer language called BASIC, which I think most, if not all of us on this program, are familiar with. And His whole idea was to get programming into the hands of students, of people who were new to things, who didn't have the ability to write in machine language at the time. And, yeah, you can still use BASIC today. It was cross-platform. It was everywhere. It was very valuable. And I happened to grab off the shelf a book that I got in the mid-'80s with my first computer. And this book is the TRS-80 Color Computer Playground. And it was part of my introduction to BASIC, the other being the extra fat BASIC manual that adults used. And through those two books, I became really, really connected with the fact that you could not only use computers to run things that other people had made, but, you know, tweak around with those things, hack around with them, and also make your own things. And I think, Gila, you shared this kind of experience.
It's very true. I had a slightly different book. I didn't have the Color Computer Playground. I had a book called Matilda the Computer Cat. But that's where I learned how to program BASIC on my TI-99-4A at home. And, you know, from Matilda the Computer Cat, I learned how to make BASIC play music. And that was super fun, actually, was sitting there. I simultaneously, you know, I could play it by seeing, and then I was able to figure out what the keys were and what how to program it, and it was super fun. And, yes, I had the Matilda the Computer Cat for the TI-99-4A, which was pretty darn spiffy.
Yeah, and Thomas Kurtz passed away on November 12th. He was 96 years old, so I think a life well lived.
Wow. Yeah, BASIC was one of my first experiences with a computer ever. Walking into the computer room of my high school, where I was not taking a computer class. In fact, I'd never taken a computer class. And there were all these what were known as deck writers. Run a 300 baud, they would just print out dot matrix onto the computer paper. Those deck writers were connected to a time-sharing computer many miles away that all the high schools on Long Island were connected to. It was called Lyric's Time-Sharing, I believe. I just remember looking at this and seeing this what looked like a typewriter typing things without anybody typing it themselves. It was like it was talking back. And I remember, you know, if you type something wrong in BASIC, it would just echo back, "What?" with a question mark. It was, you know, very simple, but to me it seemed like, wow, the computer is actually talking back. Of course, that only happened within BASIC. Once you exited BASIC, then you had a period as a prompt, and you could type all different other commands. But BASIC was the thing that made it accessible, where you could type a line number, you know, 10, print hello or whatever, 20, go to 10, etc., build an endless loop. And of course, you know, we all went to Radio Shack and did that with their computers that were on display, so that we could print out all kinds of messages that the staff at Radio Shack would have to figure out how to turn off. BASIC was a lot of fun to play with and very simple. I never really got advanced knowledge of it, but I was able to do what I wanted to do with it and also able to run other people's programs that did all kinds of cool things, play various sports games on the screen or the printout, whatever it was that we happened to be using. What strikes me, though, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, but the computers that we use now, do any of them have BASIC anywhere? How do you run BASIC today? I kind of like to do it for old time's sake, but it doesn't come with any OSs, and I think that's a shame because kind of the magic of computing is wrapped up in BASIC, and it would be nice to have that link to the past. And I don't know why you can't still use it. I mean, it still does cool things, so I don't know. Everyone's doing all kinds of Python programming and various other things like that. It's not the same. Yes, Rob.
Well, you can still use, pretty easily use Visual Basic, which is Microsoft's, I think great-great-grandchild of the original Basic. And, it's got a lot of the same, philosophy behind it. But it's a thing that, I think does still exist in usable forms.
It comes on Windows systems, or do you have to track it down?
No, I think you have to, get it deliberately. It doesn't just come with the thing anymore.
All right, we have another phone call, Kyle?
Yes, okay. There is someone on the phone.
Thank you. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes, I remember BASIC.
Rebel, you're slipping. You're call number three. You usually call number one. What happened?
I thought that you've been taking so many phone calls. I wasn't.
Well, we take the phone calls of the fastest dialers first, and that used to be you.
let's see.
Well, we all get older. It's no shame.
Yeah, I remember playing with BASIC in college. Not in college. No, you're a little older than me, so I remember playing BASIC in Radio Shack, that's what I meant to say.
That's where you went to school?
No. Actually, I played with Digital Equipment Corporation's terminals in college.
Ah, yes. I think we all did.
Now, you said you had a time shrink. At college, we had a mainframe and we had a, you know, deck. BT, I think, is 320 terminals, and we, do programs like DCL, Digital Command Language, and we had WordPerfect and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my college had a mainframe, too. They had a UNIVAC, I think a 9000. I'm not sure.
That's how old you are.
It wasn't. Look, this is something that predated me by at least a decade. It was just there while I was there. People would walk around campus with punch cards in boxes. And it was just really, silly, very user-hostile. People would wait at the dispatch window for printouts of their program running. To me, it just seemed really boring and not fun at all. Obviously, I got involved in the more fun aspects of computing.
The Queensborough Public Library used to use, back in like the 80s, they used to use Informer D304 terminals. You could look that up online. But it's like a computer. It was a computer company that went out of business. It was from California. They had the keyboard, and then on the left of the keyboard was a NIC with a monitor that you could like swivel, like a little, I guess it was like a 10-inch monitor that, and it was like a white text screen. I remember calling the computer place at Jamaica, Queens, and they said it was a Digital Equipment Corporation computer. Uh-huh. I think it was a headset of like a PDP 11 or something.
Yeah, PDP 11, PDP 10. So they were a lot of fun to play with.
What do you have? What do you have a degree in? You got a degree in from Stony Brook, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. Good on you for doing your homework. And so you should know what I got my degree in then, if you've done that much research.
Well, computer science, I'm sure.
Yeah, you are sure, but you're wrong. You're totally wrong.
What is?
My God.
Bachelor's degree in journalism?
Well, there wasn't a journalism degree when I went to Stony Brook, unfortunately. Otherwise, yes, I would have picked that. Well, keep guessing. It makes life interesting.
I got something technical like electronics or...
Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you? But no. Not a technical person, believe it or not. I love technology. I like to play with technology. I'm very good at breaking technology, but I do not program. Well, I do. I mean, you know, as much as anybody else does to get through the day, but, you know, I'm not a coder.
Oh, well, I know that, you know, you were talking about Facebook and like, permissions and all, like, that's, you know, there's a lot of, like, social media have lots of options and permissions and settings. You know, people don't even know how to, what settings to use and what options. That's why people get, you know, hacked and things like that. Mm-hmm. They don't know, you know, what settings to use and what options to, you know, permissions to use.
Right, or they listen to the wrong people and set things in ways that are not advantageous to them.
And I did not pass the ham radio test. It was very complicated. Was
you didn't pass? Oh, my goodness. Wow. I didn't. I'm sorry. Wow.
It was very complicated, you know.
Did you study?
Yeah, I mean, kind
of. That doesn't sound like you studied.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of complicated. I mean, because I don't really want to do things like set up an ad and use it for emergency communications. I'm just, you know, interested in how things work and how radio works and how, you know, how frequencies work and how things are transmitted and how antennas are set up and things like that.
Well, my understanding is, I've never taken the test myself, only because I'm being contrarian to peer pressure. But those people who did, they studied, and the questions are pretty much almost identical each time, from what I'm led to believe. So really, you know, as long as you pay attention to what you're reading and try to remember it, you should be okay. That's my understanding, anyway.
I don't know how a 10-year-old just can pass the test at the whole conference in like 2 hours or 3 hours. Or
3-year-olds can pass this. I mean, it depends on your commitment.
It is becoming really useful because so many devices are using wireless protocols and many different forms of access control, all that. I mean, it's becoming ubiquitous. The ability is like it can be so tiny on the most unlikely device. I was looking at an air conditioner today that I guess has wireless capabilities or something. I don't use it. And I was like kind of taking it apart, looking at, I was literally taking it apart. There's no kind of there. I committed. But it's funny because the wireless module actually has a USB-A connection, like the very big one. So you could physically disconnect the sort of module and disable it. And I started thinking about it. I was like, wow, so now I have like a USB access to the unit, the device itself, so I could maybe hardwire some other controller or use some other antenna or frequency than Wi-Fi. And then I started thinking, well, what could I do with the Wi-Fi module? Could I like show up and like hook a computer up and appear to be an air conditioner, like logging onto people's networks? And
that would be fun.
I started having a lot of fun thinking about it, but yeah, that's a great spirit. So pursue it, and maybe you'll pass, and then it's just something you have. But I've resisted as well, and then found, like, oh, if I want to go, like, learn about one discipline or the other, you know, it invariably involves some sort of wireless connection at some point. So it's a sort of necessary evil, I guess is what I'm saying.
Rebel, regards to your ham radio test, you got to take it again. Do you know what your score was?
All right, there was 35 questions. You had to get 25 right, so I got 21 right.
Okay, you're close. You're close. And if you take it again, guaranteed some of the questions are going to be the same, so you should remember those. Just go back, take it again. You'll pass next time. Because we're going to ask you every week if you have your license yet. And this is not going to go away, so we expect you to follow through.
Right, but apparently I got to go all the way to Westchester and get it and do it and all this stuff.
Well, they don't have ham radio tests in Queens, right? Wait, why the hell wouldn't they? Yes, Rob, go ahead.
Do they tell you which questions you got wrong so you know where you need to study up?
Actually, they do. I was close to yesterday. And they were going to, yeah. And
wait, you have to go in to see what questions you got wrong?
Yeah, I think, yeah, you have to go, yeah. That's the thing, it's a pain. I got to go all the way to Valhalla, which is up in Westchester, and it's, you know, I mean, I've had a car, you know. It's just
dark. This is 1952? They can't communicate, you know, through other ways?
No, they had Zoom classes. No, they had Zoom classes, like, you know, like I did the classes all over, like, Zoom. I went up there once or twice, but I did most of the classes on Zoom. But doing a test, you have to obviously be in person. So.
Right, but finding out what questions you got wrong, you shouldn't have to go all the way upstate to find that out.
Yeah, well.
All right, well, that's something. I'm sure there are tests being given closer to you than Westchester.
I don't know. Do you have assistance one number, sir? What listing? Hello, sir?
Gila, go ahead.
There is an offer on the table. Lex, I don't know, is it Pendragon or Pendragon? I don't know. Lex, please throw that in the chat. But we do have an offer. Lex says he'll buy Rebel Club Mate at the next Hope if he passes the ham test.
He's got to wait till Hope to get a mate?
That's a good deal.
Yeah, well, you know, you can get mates at the 2600 meeting, which takes place every month on 53rd Street between 3rd Avenue and Lexington, just saying.
But not to get overly doxy, Lex does not live in the area.
Well, whose fault is that?
Should we say where else you can get it?
Where else can you get it?
Oh, never mind.
No, say where else you can get it.
Cosplus.
Who, what?
Cosplus World Market.
Cosplus World Market.
Okay, say it louder so people don't understand.
Cosplus World Market.
Where is that? I don't know of any around.
I don't know. It's in more places than you. When you're looking for it, it's everywhere. But then, like, if you're not thinking about it, you it's like camouflage.
So if I start looking for it, I'm going to see what Cosplus what now?
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to go out right now.
They have some spiffy stuff.
It's a world.
Oh, wait. No, we got this on the West Coast. On the West Coast.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, but that's a West Coast thing. Is it an East Coast thing? You're getting people's hopes up. I don't know.
The East Coast has to figure itself out. I'm not in charge of that. When you're traveling, look for it.
We did find some Club Mate while we were traveling. That was fun.
Both ham radio tests and Club Mate from time to time occurs in Queens.
No one has ever failed a ham radio test while holding a bottle of Club Mate, a full bottle of Club Mate. That's a fact. Look it up.
I think half the class failed.
Well, maybe you were just dragged down by them, you know?
And now you're telling on them.
I'm just saying, if you're in a bad, you know, environment and people aren't taking, you know, their studies seriously, you can get pulled down, too. And I think that's what might have happened to Rebel, because he normally passes every test. You know, this is...
I don't like Club Mate.
Okay, don't say things like you can't take back, Rebel. Be careful.
Well, I know, because I tried it at the Hope Conference. I don't like it.
You know what? We can talk to you about that. That's treatable.
Okay, Director, what listing, sir?
This is the point where we disconnect because we are finished for the night. And you're the last call for a change. And it was good hearing from you. It's good saying goodbye, too. And we will see you next time. Thanks everybody who called in. Thanks everybody who listened. Thanks everybody who's on the chat. Any words from the people out there in Skype land to the crowd before we leave?
Yep. Thanks to all the folks on Mastodon listening. You can find us on Mastodon if you haven't already. Off the Hook at hackers.town.
And thanks to everybody on the YouTube chat for hanging in with us tonight. It was a very lively discussion, and we've all just started talking about where we learned BASIC. So that's been great fun. Thanks, everybody, for being part of it. And next week, if folks want to bring back the conversation about Internet of Things-enabled devices like my brother's dishwasher, that can certainly be a discussion for then. And again, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You have anything, Alex?
Not really too much to add. I just say I look forward to joining you all for our special Thanksgiving edition of Off the Hook next week. See you all then.
And since you guys brought up Mastodon, I guess I have to bring up Blue Sky, where 2600 is on as well. I'm not sure how to say this yet. The ID is 2600.com, which is, you know, a cool feature that you can have a URL be the ID if you verify. And it's a good way also to know that people are who they say they are. I think if you type 2600.com anywhere in Blue Sky, you'll find us. But the full URL is bsky.app/profile/2600.com. That'll get you there, and you can take it from there. And we all have personal accounts on various things as well, so you'll probably find us if you find anything.
Be the rogue appliance you want to see hacking in the world.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And write to us, oth@2600.com. We will see you next week. Good night, everyone.